Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Eric Shapiro. David North Martino. John Copenhaver. And Al Warren. FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, and we've got Mr. Dave North Martino, second greatest mystery of all.
That's right, a conundrum.
A conundrum.
Yeah, a conundrum. You're using my full name again.
Yeah, well, you know, I want to keep you on edge.
That's right. I
know you just fall asleep if I don't.
It's true.
You know, do throw some stuff at you.
Exactly. You're going to keep me awake.
Yeah, otherwise you're just like start taking a nap, you know, with your cat.
Yes.
You and your cat.
Snuggle with the cat.
How old is your cat getting now?
Depends on how you look at it, because really it's true. Beth said one thing, and where we got the cat from, they had a different thought about how old this cat. So this cat is kind of like, what was it, Schrodinger's cat? Or you might be one age, you might be another age, depending upon how you look at it.
Oh, well. Well, roughly, how old is it? How's that?
I believe he's around five.
Five. Yeah. That's like 35. That's prime age,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Prime age for the cat. And you actually take it out with a leash, don't you?
Sometimes. Well, harness. And sometimes I just go out and we just put a collar on him. So if he runs off, he still has a collar. But I basically go out there with him and give him some outdoor time so he can sniff around the grass and eat the grass.
Yeah, of course he needs it. If he eats your cooking, he needs grass.
Yeah, to help exactly. His digestion. No, he won't eat. He won't eat human food.
Oh, I wouldn't either.
He will only eat my food. He'll only eat out of cans.
Yeah,
it's kind of like in that movie. What is that movie? They only eat out of cans. It's a horror film. I just can't remember the name of it.
Some sort of zombie thing. Anyway. Yeah. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about fantasy. And horror and things like that, you know, supernatural, I guess. So we've got a writer from the UK, and the new book is called The Hiding, and the author that's with us is Alethea Lyons. So welcome, Thea, to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure. Now, is this your first book, or when did you start writing?
This is my first published book. It's, like, I think, the fourth one I've written, but the others are just here waiting on my computer for someone to read them. But I've been writing since I was really little. My father also writes, so it's kind of in my family.
So you always had that in your mind, like when you were young, like a kid in school and all that, you were thinking you were going to be a writer?
Yeah, I remember like the earliest things I wrote when I was about six. I wrote a story about some witches living in a cave and something to do with a robot that kept making bubbles that couldn't be burst. So I was always writing speculative stuff as well.
So are you a horror fan or are you a fantasy fan? Like, how do you classify yourself?
Definitely on the fantasy side. I'm a complete wuss, which my mother thinks is a funny thing because she's read some of the things I've written, especially the short stories. And some of them are very much on that borderline between dark fantasy and horror. And most of the people in my writing group are horror writers. So I've had to get a lot more into it since joining that group.
Right. Well, you know, it's a very close thing, and especially for older people, like old people like myself, I always classify them all as the same. To me, dark fantasy, horror, it's all sort of in the same group for me. How do you see a difference? Like, what's different about dark fantasy as compared to straight-up horror?
I generally see sort of two main streams of horror. You have the horror that's the straight up jump scare, gore kind of horror, which I think is very different and isn't necessarily overlapping with fantasy at all, because that can be things like your very human things like serial killers and things like that. But then you also have the more psychological horror, and I think that often overlaps more with fantasy. And there can be the element of, is it something fantastical, or is it something that is human but has been really twisted? Or there's things like, we have obviously vampires as very much a crossover, because they're a supernatural creature, so they're fantasy, but they're primarily regarded as horror because they do such horrible things. So I think it's really difficult to draw the line. I think horror probably is the intent deliberately to scare? Is that what it's been created for? Is it too scared, or is it something else?
And horror, it can be a lot more aggressive and more more blatant with violence, I guess, than dark fantasy or fantasy. I guess that can be too, but I think of it as more subtle in a fantasy. I think of it more of a mental element than a physical. But again, I'm just trying to figure things out because I'm, like I said, I'm ancient.
Well, if you manage to figure them out, I think there's a lot of people in publishing who would be happy to know the answer.
Yeah. Well, by the time I do, I'll be probably in a rest home, so nobody will care. So is there much violence in them? Do you have a lot of violence in a book like this?
No. There's murders in it. There is a mystery element in there about this ongoing spree of murders. And we do see things from the antagonist's point of view. So we see the people being killed, but they're not violent or gory deaths. And in general, when I write things that involve fights or involve something that might be a bit bloody, I tend not to go into massive amounts of detail on it, because I'll just gross myself out, for starters.
You don't want to be writing and start throwing up, right?
No, I tried to write something scarier once, and I was home alone, and I was making dinner right afterwards. And when I went to lean over to the fridge to get something, there was this huge shadow behind me with this knife, and I completely freaked out and then realized I hadn't put the knife down after I was chopping the onions, and it was my knife.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I don't write things that are too gory because I just scare myself.
So what's the premise in this book? Like, what are people getting in the hiding? What is it?
So the kind of the top-level premise, if you will, is that it is a supernatural mystery. There's a spree of murders happening. Magic is illegal in this alternate reality that it's based in, and the murders couldn't be done by a human. The way that pieces of the bodies are being removed isn't possible to do by human means. And so my main character, Harper, is investigating this, but with the problem that while she is human, and she's therefore investigating on behalf of the human side, she's also a witch, so she has a foot in both camps.
So does this take place in modern-day Earth, or how do you describe the setting?
So it's a dark alternate version. It's broadly contemporary. I've not kind of pinned it to a particular year, but they have similar technology levels to us in terms of laptops and phones and things like that. Similar levels of forensic science, which comes into it. But in a world where there's been some key differences in history and where magic is considered a fact. So depending on who you ask, where it comes from, whether it comes from God or the devil or somewhere else, but everyone knows that magic is something that genuinely exists. There are supernatural creatures out there, and that's given a big kind of dark turn to history because that's been banned. It's done so many terrible things, and it's created almost this kind of secret police to battle it.
Well, did you create your own magic system for this novel, or... How do you work with that? Did you go back to contemporary magic? Did you go into mythology? How does that work?
So for this one, I did a lot of reading on witchcraft because my character is a witch. She's a seer, so she has primarily dreams of things that are happening or about to happen. So I did a lot of reading into both kind of the modern interpretations of how people look at dreams and how people practice religions like Wicca, but also historically, particularly kind of going around the 1500s, 1600s times when you've got all the witch hunts and what kind of things people were being accused of doing then.
It's kind of interesting. Do you have kind of a supernatural past or something where you interact like with ghosts, if you had some sort of, you know, paranormal experiences that you draw from?
No, it's not something that I personally believe in. So someone asked me recently, what's the creepiest thing that's ever happened to you? And I was struggling because even when it's creepy at the time, because your brain thinks, oh, that could be a ghost, my brain the next morning goes, well, I don't believe in that. So it's more just, I think, growing up with that interest in fantasy and the idea that there could be magic, that there could be fairies living at the bottom of your garden that you can't see, that there might be a spirit living in the tree and the tree has that life of its own, and those kind of hidden but nicer magics being in the world.
That's interesting to write a book about it in detail and not really have any background or belief in it. That's kind of, how do you put yourself into that kind of a frame of mind to write in that style?
So there are things that, like, my character doesn't believe in ghosts either. It's not something in their universe that they have undead. So we mentioned vampires before. They wouldn't have vampires in their universe because there is a faith-based element in the book. And I didn't want to muddy the waters with things that can be afterlife as opposed to just alternate life in this universe. And I said, I think that kind of magic side of things has always been interesting. And I don't necessarily disbelieve that there can be magic in the world. I think it was Terry Pratchett who was talking about, there's some, one of the big authors I was reading one time, talking about being able to hold contradictory beliefs simultaneously. And I think the scientific bit of my brain that goes, this is how the world works, can believe one thing. And then the fantasy writer part of my brain can go, but if there was magic, could you detect it with that science anyway? It could be sitting right there and we just can't see it. And that's very much what The Hiding is about. That magic is there and people can't see it. And how can we detect it scientifically and how can it interact with modern society?
Yeah, just go over to Dave's house and you'll see all sorts of interactions going on over there that are supernatural.
Natural. Paranormal.
Yeah.
I mean, who hasn't thought their computer was haunted or taken over by some kind of gremlin?
Right. Yeah. Story of my life. Okay. So now your main characters. Who are your main characters in this? This is, what is it, Harper? Harper, is that one of your main characters?
So Harper is my main character. She's the one I mentioned before, the seer. And most of the novel is from her point of view. And through the course of the novel, she assembles this team that starts with her foster sister, Grace, and then they're joined by other people as the book progresses. There's a couple of scenes that are from their points of view. So we have a deception demon who she accidentally summons and who decides to stick around because it looks funny. So there's a couple of bits that are from his point of view because he's just really fun to write. And then the other parts are from the antagonist's point of view. So she's kind of a main character as well.
Well, how do you get yourself into the head of something like that? And I guess I should start out by, what is your relationship with your main character?
In what way, sorry?
Like you, how do you write their dialogue? And do you feel your character? Do you see them, hear them? Is it like a movie? Do you have any of that stuff? Or how do you relate to your character?
Well, my characters are very noisy. I am definitely in the writing school of my characters will say what they want to say and they will do what they want to do. And hopefully they'll end up where I want them to end up because they have their own opinions on things. And sometimes when I'm very deep in writing something, particularly when I'm first drafting it and I'm getting to know the characters, they will have a lot of opinions on things outside of their book. So I might be down shopping at the mall and they'll be going, oh, I like that dress. Or those shoes aren't very nice. Can we have this for dinner? So they're very noisy that way. And I kind of get to know how they talk and their likes and dislikes that way. But when I'm writing, it is very visual, as you say, very much like watching a movie. And I'm just almost channeling it through from what I can see into the computer. And the characters are often the ones more in charge than I am.
Well, do your characters surprise you so much that they pull the plot off the rails?
They have. One of my other books I wrote, I started out writing a romance, and my characters refused to kiss. I'm like, this is a romance. You clearly like each other. I've given you all these opportunities, and we're like two-thirds of the way through the book. Can you guys just please get on with this? And they're just like, no, don't want to. But yeah, that one was a very slow-burn romance, and it was not supposed to be when I started writing it.
What do you hope the reader takes away from the book? When they pick up the book, take it home and read it, what is it you hope that they get from it?
Primarily, I want it just to be something that's enjoyable to read, that they will get some chills from and a couple of surprises and just generally enjoy being in that atmosphere and in that alternate York. But then on maybe a bit of a deeper level, one of my aims in writing it was to show a normal where people of different backgrounds and different faiths can get along together, can work together and be friends, and that actually, even though we've got this very fantasy setting of magic and humans against each other, that in our real world setting, we have similar problems where we see each other as being these huge opposing forces, but actually we're not that far apart and we can be together.
Well, it says your character Harper ends up bumping into a ghost walker. What is a ghost walker and how does that play into the story?
So real York has loads of ghost tours. It's one of the most haunted cities in Britain. And if you are walking around just on a normal day, you will see lots of signs and you will see people in costumes from various eras who are selling tickets to the tours they have in the evening. And calling them ghost walkers is literally just something I made up because I could not find what these people were called other than something like ghost tour guides, which was a bit of a mouthful to say all the time. But they need a better name.
Perfect.
Now I just need it to catch on in York.
Just got to get out there and start throwing it at people, you know?
That's all.
Yeah. Just maybe not tell them that I kill one of them in the, you know, the couple of opening chapters.
Yeah, no.
They might not like it so much.
No. And it's interesting in that. Do you base any of these off of people you know or people you've come across in your life or worked with or maybe went to school with or stuff like that? Do you ever take a personality from someone that you find interesting and then kind of incorporate it into one of your characters?
Definitely. And I'd say none of them are like a copy-paste of this is this person, but there's definitely elements of people I know who make their way into those characters. And especially when I'm writing some of the characters who are from a very different background to me. So one of my characters is a Muslim scientist of Bangladeshi background. And so to try and make him authentic and to try and make sure that he is sensitive to those cultures, there are a lot of elements of him that have come directly from friends of mine who are from those cultures.
Yeah, I guess, do you find it difficult to write under the mindsets of people that you wouldn't normally come across? Like, you have to make sure it's done right, right? So, do you actually read about it or go meet people, and how do you go about doing that?
Yeah, I mean, as much as I can. So, I'm a huge fan of doing research. Again, since I was little, I've been quite happy to go to the library, give me a pile of books and a pad and pen of... I will happily just go through and be looking stuff up and making notes. So I do a lot of reading on the backgrounds of the characters, but also I try and stick with things where I do know people from it so I can ask them questions. So I can go to them and say, you know, what can you tell me a bit more about this particular type of prayer? What would your character do in this circumstance? And with the character I mentioned before, with Saqib, because he is in kind of a delicate position and it's a faith that's not my own, I wanted to be particularly careful with how I portrayed him. So I spent a lot of time with one of my friends who's very active in her community saying, you know, what is the process for this? And asking some questions that were kind of weird, like about how dead bodies are handled, for example, which you can't really just go up and ask a stranger. That really has to be someone who already knows that you're not a psychopath. So she was very happy to just sit down with me and kind of go through some of those unusual circumstances that he would find himself in, of how would he react to this? Is there particular language that he would use? Are there particular prayers that he would use in this circumstance? And then once I was done, it has also gone through a sensitivity reader to make sure that I didn't misinterpret something too badly.
What do you think the hardest part of writing a book like this is?
I think this kind of crossover fantasy where it's partially real world, it is getting that authenticity in, because you want to make sure that it is close enough to our world that it is accurate and relatable. But at the same time, you need to make those differences clear in it as well. And that can be a very fine line between it either just being a copy-paste of our world or being something so radically different that actually it's not making the point you want it to make.
So what is it? Do you have a subtext? Is there a main thing that you want people to get out of the book that's underneath the story or besides the actual entertainment of it?
Basically just about the fact that we are different and the differences that we have are good things. So all of these characters in this main group come from different backgrounds. They have different relationships with faith. They are from different cultural backgrounds. Their ancestors have come from different countries. Some of them aren't even human, but they're friends and they work together. And actually, the differences that they bring to that are what mean that they can do what they need to do. They can go and solve this mystery because they have these differences, rather than being hindered by it. And the England in my book is very insular. It's even cut off from Scotland and Wales. They're far too free with having magic in them, so the English don't like them. And it is a massive exaggeration of things that have happened in the country in the last decade or so, but the parallels, I hope, are still there.
Well, how did you put in, bring in the folklore into this novel? Did you do a lot of research for that? Was it mostly imagination? How did that work for you?
A bit of a mix. There's some stuff that I have just made up, and without giving spoilers, the main thing that is happening that is behind these murders is something that I have made up. But the details of who the antagonist is and what kind of creature she is was something I did loads of research into, both physically going to some of the sites around York that are related to it, in books about the area and about the folklore related to the type of creature she is. And I've grown up again with this kind of folkloric background in my family. We listen to a lot of folk music. There's always been fantasy and fairy tales on our bookshelves. So a lot of those creatures are already very familiar from British folklore, and kind of bringing some of those into it, I think, is one of those things that gives it that bit of authenticity, because it is similar to our world, and there is that element of, well, we have believed in these things in the past, so could there be something that's still out there that's gone into hiding and we've stopped believing in it, but actually we shouldn't have?
Is there a particular character, like they say the writers in every character somewhat, but is there one character you find yourself relating to more than all the others, maybe you feel more part of?
There's definitely elements of me in Harper, in her bookishness and the fact that she's an archivist at the cathedral, so her default is, something weird is happening, I should go and do some research, which is very much coming from me. And I think for most of my main characters and things that I write, there is some element of them that is part of me, that's almost like my starting point of, I know this very well, I can write this, I know how someone thinks who is like this. And then other different elements of their character will come in, and they won't be like me in many other things, but I find having something of a connection is a really good starting point.
I think that also, I guess your setting sounds important to you. So do you write it like a character in itself?
Definitely. It was very important to me to pick the right place for it, because I had the idea for the characters and the plot first. And so I was trying to find somewhere that worked for that. And it needed to be a place that had suitably august historical, like political and religious power, which York definitely does. There's a few other places that have that, but I'm a northern girl, so I wanted to keep it up north, and we spent a lot of time in Yorkshire when I was growing up, so it was a very familiar place. And York is also this kind of wonderfully, it's very twisted, and there's lots of little crooked streets and houses that lean over because they're old and they've shifted, and it's just brimming with all of that character all on its own. It kind of writes itself, which is not a thing a writer should probably say, but it's definitely already got that kind of level of creepiness. And I was there a couple of weeks ago, and I was out at 1 o'clock in the morning when all of the crowds were gone. And there's this little bit of rain, and the only light you have is the street lights, and all of these little tiny alleys are completely dark, and it has that perfect atmosphere.
Well, you know, and is there a particular reason why you chose to make the magic an illegal activity?
Partially because it was necessary to the plot that there was that difference between the everyday stuff that, you know, humans were going around and doing, and the people who weren't human, the folk who were spirits and shifters and all sorts of other supernatural creatures. I wanted to create something where there was an opposition rather than where they were already working well together, because you need to have some opposition in order to have a plot. But also I wanted to have that within Harper, that she was both, and to explore how that affected her mentally, that she is two different things that are supposed to hate each other.
So who in your real life have you killed in your book?
I have yet to kill anyone in real life in a book. There's a few characters who are based on people, like the Ghost Walker is based on the actual Ghost Walkers. So it would be quite funny if the gentleman who actually does match that description ever read it and came and said to me, "What did I do to you?" Oh, you just looked good, sorry.
Yeah, you were the right place.
I have gone to my writing group before and said, I need to kill somebody and I don't like naming characters. It's one of those things, I either know the name of them straight away or it's a 3-hour research trip trying to find the right one. So I'll go to my writing group and say, tell me the name of someone who was a teacher at school you really hated. Okay, that's going to be that character.
Oh, there we go. We're getting it now. You know. So now you've written the book. And it comes out, let's see, I believe in March.
Yep, Tuesday.
Of this year, March. Yeah, March 5th. How do you think this whole process of writing this book and getting it published has changed you?
I think the biggest change is just being willing to let other people read it, which sounds crazy when you're pursuing publication, but particularly when someone's actually reading it and you're getting live feedback as they read it, that is a very difficult thing to start with. And between getting that kind of live feedback of, this is not working, or this doesn't make sense, I don't like this bit, and the fact that in order for pretty much anyone to get something published, you have to submit to loads and loads of places, and the majority of them are going to send you back a form response that says, thank you for submitting this to us, it's not quite our cup of tea. So you kind of have to get thick-skinned that you're going to have people who aren't interested or don't like it. And then once it's been published, you're going to have people who leave you 1-star reviews and say, this is terrible, I don't know why anyone wasted money on this. And I think, because I'm a very shy person, she says talking on a interview thing, but there you go, I would not have been able to do this 3 years ago. And just the whole idea that anyone was going to read something I've written was completely terrifying. And my brain would just shut down at the thought. I couldn't talk about it. I couldn't contemplate the idea of giving it to someone else to read. And I joined this writing group and became very good friends with one of the people in it. And so I'm like, okay, I will let you read something. And she gave me very helpful feedback, but she also liked it. And I was like, oh, this is different. So I think that's kind of the biggest change, is all of the criticisms and rejections have actually made me more confident, because like, what else is someone going to throw at you?
Yeah, you absorb all that dislike and then you turn it into something creative. You know, you can always just like find them and hunt them down and have them tortured.
Exactly. I mean, if I see someone's left me a 1-star review, I can kill them in another book.
Right.
I wouldn't do that. If you want to leave a 1-star review, you go ahead.
No, I go after them. I find where they live and the whole thing. Well, listen, speaking of that, so do you have a website, social media, all of that? How do people find you?
I have all of those things. I'm most active on Twitter, but there's also my website, and that has a couple of sample chapters on it and some other bits and pieces as well, some extra material. But it's all accessible through, I've got like a website that lists them all, so you can just go on and click. And do you want me to give you the website address?
Yeah, please do. Yeah, give us that.
linktr.ee/AletheaRLyons.
Fantastic. Of course, we'll have all that up in the on our website so people can find it with one click. And fantastic. So what are you up to now? What's going on? What are you working on now?
Well, I've just got the edits back from the publisher for the collection of short stories that's coming out in September. And those take place directly in the aftermath of The Hiding. So they're dealing with the fallout from that and kind of setting up towards book two. And then when I send those edits back, I'm back to editing book two.
Yeah, never ends. You'll be in the cycle now forever.
Well, I've plotted out at least 3 books for this, so hopefully.
Yeah, well, just you have to wait and see. Play it by ear, you know, see where it goes, you know, and it's all good. So
it's a fun ride.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the book we're talking about is called The Hiding. And our guest is the author of that book, and it's Alethea Lyons. So thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. It's been really fun talking to you.
Thanks, Thea.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.